This episode of Datanauts is brought to you by IT Pro TV. IT Pro TV is an easy, entertaining approach to online IT training. For a free 7-day trial and 30% off the life of your account, go to itpro.tv/datanauts and use the code datanauts30. Today on Datanauts, we get real as it gets in a data center. Racks. You know, those cages with doors you bolt noisy metal things into and sometimes you cut your fingers? So racks are more or less standard, and maybe they don't seem that exciting, but they are fussy things. Cable management for power and network, along with maintaining airflow, all of these things are crucial to the noisy metal operating properly. Getting metal in and out of the rack is also a big deal, fraught with peril, as any of you that have performed equipment swaps know. Therefore, there is room to make data center racks better, and there's been several efforts on this front. There's an open rack standard proposed by Google and Facebook. There's the earlier open rack proposed by the Open Compute Project. And then the topic of today's podcast is the Open 19 rack standard proposed by LinkedIn, now a Microsoft company. I am Ethan Banks at EC Banks, along with Chris Wall at Chris Wall. And joining us from LinkedIn to discuss Open 19 is Yuval Bachar, Principal Engineer, Global Infrastructure Architecture and Strategy at LinkedIn. Yuval, welcome to the Datanauts podcast, and would you briefly introduce yourself to our audience?
Hi, my name is Yuval Bachar. I am part of the strategy group at LinkedIn. I'm working on the development of the next generation data centers for LinkedIn, and as a path that we take to actually grow from a really large enterprise to a really large cloud operator. We are working on all the dimensions of the data centers, from the network to the installation process to the way we actually build the data centers and where we put them. And Open 19 is a key value for us for LinkedIn data center build-out, but we found out in the process of the development that Open 19 is also extremely applicable for a lot of other data centers from different sizes, from small to large. And as a result, we decided to open it up to the industry and create an ecosystem around it.
Okay, so we have some sense of what Open 19 is. Give us a little bit more. What exactly is specified in Open 19 and in the open source project?
Open 19 is a framework to develop a new generation of data centers. That framework is defining the form factors of storage, compute, and network elements in the rack. But then Open 19 is creating an environment where everybody can actually innovate. We do not force any participant in the Open 19 to actually expose their server technology or storage technology. As long as they fit the same form factor in the rack, they can actually play part of it. The key value in Open 19, and it's actually related in its name, this is a 19-inch rack technology. 19-inch means a standard rack that you can find in every location, in every continent, in every site. If it's your site, if it's a colo, if it's an exchange point, 19-inch EIA racks will always be there. That's why this technology will fit in any location from small to large. Open 19 in general defines three elements which are really, really essential for us. One is the interoperability of each and every one of the elements, connecting to a blind-made connectivity of both data and for power that enables the integration of those elements into the rack to be very quickly and to be very cleanly. So you don't have to deal with cables in this environment. The second aspect for that is that Open 19 comes with full disaggregation, which means for us, every element in the Open 19 platform is completely independent. It's independent because it's EMI contained and fully tested. It's independent because it has its own cooling elements and it does not rely on any cooling from the outside. It's independent because it can be managed as an independent unit from the outside when we run high-level management systems. To summarize, it's a 19-inch environment defining blind-made connectivity for power and data, defining a form factor for server storage solutions with defining three types of form factors. A brick, which is a half-wide, a double-wide brick, which is a 1RU 19-inch solution, and a double-high brick, which is a 2RU solution, all fitting into the same form factor, into the same called brick cage, which is holding those elements together, but it's a completely passive element.
So interesting. I'm thinking about the current challenges that we're facing in the data center with racks, and it sounds like with what you're talking about, I don't have to actually replace the rack itself, just the components within the rack? Is this rip and replace at the rack level or the components that go in the rack?
It's completely at the component level, and it fits into any rack. If you have existing racks in your data center, or you take your data center or mini data center into a location which we get rack space and you don't get the actual rack, select which rack you put. It's just component replacement. The one element which is really, really interesting as well in Open 19 is that you can mix and match Open 19 server technology with non-Open 19 standard 19-inch appliances or any other element that you would like to put in the same rack. There's nothing which prevents you from doing that. The Open 19 comes in two types of chunks. It comes in chunks of 24 servers, 24 bricks, or 16 bricks. And you can build up your rack in any way you want with any combination of 24 and 16 together. So the biggest configuration we have for LinkTeam is we put four of the by 24 and we build a 96 server configuration with a switch and a power shelf, which provides the power to the rest of the elements in the rack. But in other configuration and other partners that we have, it has been reported to us that they're planning on actually building a 48 configuration, which means putting two of those 40 by 24 brick cages and adding some additional technology on top of it, like routers or load balancers or firewall, which are standard 19, and they just fit on top of the cage itself.
From a LinkedIn perspective, Yuval, why did you guys decide to go this route? I mean, there's a lot of rack technologies that do something similar, or depending on what vendor you invest in, that can give you some of these benefits. Why are you guys driving this open standard?
The reason that we drove the open standard lies in the goals that we defined. The goals that we defined were, first, we need to be in any 19-inch, which actually disqualified almost more than 60% of the solutions out there. If you need to be in any 19 in any environment, it just doesn't exist to buy it off the shelf. The second element is we wanted to reduce the COGS of the rack commons. The rack commons today is pretty expensive. It's starting from PDUs going into cables, power cables going into DAC cables to connect into the top of rack. We wanted to eliminate these and reduce the cost of these dramatically. And lastly, we wanted to be in a position that we can actually integrate the rack extremely fast. Today, it takes about 6 to 7 hours to integrate a rack with the standard technology, screwing in every server, running the cables, etc. In Open 19, we expect this integration time to go to about an hour and a half to hour 45, and we will demonstrate this in the next few weeks.
Do you guys really stand up racks so often that that time saving, you know, 6 to 8 hours down to an hour and a half or so, is that critical?
If we look at this on a typical data center, which is in the 50 to 100,000 servers, that's a relatively large data center. If we integrate about 48 elements in every rack, if you do the quick math, you're talking about hundreds of racks in some cases and thousands of racks in other cases. So if we do 50 servers per rack on 100,000 servers, you're talking about 2,000 racks almost. 2,000 racks, if we drop from 6 hours to an hour and a half, we save ourselves hundreds of hours, which means that we can light up the data center much faster than we could before, fully loaded. Now, it's also very, very attractive to some of our partners, which are partners dealing with integration. A lot of our peers are doing what's called rack and roll, which means they're racking the racks off-site and rolling it into the data center fully loaded. In that case, the integrators, the people who actually do the integration for them before they roll it in, people like Celestica, people like Sanmina, they love us because their efficiency in actually introducing racks faster is pure benefit for them from an efficiency perspective on how they integrate it.
Yuval, there's been rack standards already coming out of the Open Compute Project, so why wouldn't you guys glommed on to that, especially since Microsoft is now part of LinkedIn or vice versa, and Microsoft's a big part of OCP? Why the new Open 19 standard?
So the main difference between Open 19 and OCP, and all the contribution of OCP, it's not necessarily specific operator contribution, is that if you look at all the contribution of OCP into the industry, if it's a rack which has been contributed or a server that has been contributed, what happened is that the different operators went and designed the servers, went and built the racks, and then they contributed to the industry. If you go one level deeper, say, I don't really like the server that, let's say, for example, Microsoft contributed to to OCP, I don't have any option. I can't really go and actually do something else because that's the only thing which has been contributed. If you look at my competitive situation, if I'm inserting, for example, OCP racks that has been contributed by Facebook, and I want to go and buy servers into those racks, assuming that I can insert that rack is a non-standard rack. If I can insert that rack into my data center, I'm limited to one or maybe two suppliers of those servers, and they all sell me the same server. They don't sell me different varieties of servers. In Open19, by just defining the form factor and not defining the inside of the server, we enable the huge impact to the industry because now we can see a combination of suppliers from the high-end suppliers like HP Enterprise all the way to the white box suppliers like Supermicro or Quanta bidding for the same position in the rack, the same slot in the rack, and enabling us to break away from the lockdown, which is happening both in OCP as well as in any other configuration that you actually pick and install in a data center, from being associated directly with a supplier. So when we create this rack full of open slots, which are blind mateable, we just created ourselves an opening for 48 or 96 elements in a rack. Now we go out and say, okay, Quanta, Supermicro, HP, Celestica, Flex, whoever is producing servers, here is my slot. You want to bid for that slot? Sure. This is the configuration of the server I want. What is your bid? Now, from an operator perspective, when we look at this, we have five or six options for every slot that we're trying to fill. While before, if we were either with OCP solution or with a solution which is dedicated from one of the white box solutions, we were stuck with them. We couldn't move. We couldn't change. And if Gen 2, that our server's coming in, and the supplier that you used to buy servers from does not have that Gen 2 that we're looking for, then we just put something else next to it. So I can completely put a server from Quanta next to a server from Supermicro, next to a server from HP, and they will coexist, they will live together, they will be completely disaggregated and be enabled to actually themselves, cool themselves, live by themselves, and be living next to a server which is not from the same family. That value is not existing in any of the open compute or open standard for racks. And that value comes hand in hand with the fact that I don't need to touch the rack. Why would I change the rack? Why would I go for a rack which is not standard, which is not acceptable in every place, which in colos I cannot bring in, which requires special cooling elements, which requires special EMI containment, which requires all those things that I just don't want to deal with. I'm working at LinkedIn, and at LinkedIn, we're building data centers. That's what we know how to do extremely well. We want to send the problem of designing the server to the people that know extremely well how to design servers. And that's the list of all the server suppliers that are actually endorsing Open19 and will build servers into this form factor, and we can buy from all of them the variety of those.
You're making a point here that a big distinction between Open19 and Open Compute, the way they've structured rack specifications at that with OCP, the way you're describing it, there's a big interdependency not only on the physical rack and its parameters and what plugs in there as far as form factor, but also the chips inside those servers, et cetera. And so you're kind of locked into a very specific ecosystem within OCP. And I know from sitting in on a few of those meetings and keeping up with the project that a lot of that is about driving costs down. Let's specify something common to all of us being a few number of very large operators with huge spends that want a very specific product. They specify those things. It's ratified by OCP, and then you buy at that scale. But if that's not aligning to what you individually want, maybe that's not for you, and it gets to be a hard thing or just an impractical thing. Whereas with Open19, you're saying, here's a rack for the masses. Here's a rack that works for us at LinkedIn. It's form factor specific, but not server specific. And so therefore, we're just looking for a server that fits into this slot or whatever the various size slots are that we've defined. And that's all we're looking for. We can spec internals however we want. And it's just form factor standardization that we're going for, not all the interdependent components and parts that make up a rack or a pod.
That is absolutely correct. And if you see all the large data center operators, you will see that each and every one of them has a contribution of their server into the OCP environment. And you'll say, okay, why is this not standard, right? It's not standard because each and every one of the operators have its own needs. And when you're large enough, like Microsoft or like Facebook or like Google, you can say, you know what? I'm building my server. I have a volume of hundreds of thousands or maybe millions in some cases. It's justifying the development. It's justifying everything. But if you look at the mid-tier operators and even the people which are below the mid-tier operators, they have no option to do that because from their perspective, their volume that they're representing is not large enough to define a server that will be designed purely for us. So if you look at the contribution to OCP, the way it's happened right now, each one of those operators is designing their own servers and contributing to OCP under the premise, hey, come use my server, it's great. But in reality, nobody's using it. If you look at the adoption level of OCP today, OCP servers are at extremely low adoption, cross-pollination, right? Obviously, Facebook is really, really adopting really strong their servers, and Microsoft is probably really adopting really hard their servers, but how many people except Facebook is using the Facebook servers? None. That's something that we're trying to change. We're trying to create a product that can be adopted by multiple people in any dimension data center. If you're building a data center for 500 servers, or if you're building a data center for 5,000 or 50,000 servers, you can leverage the same technology and you can have the negotiation power with your server providers, with the storage solution providers that you have in the industry, say, my slot is Open 19 compatible. What can you offer me? And again, collect the 6 or 7 or 10 or 15 types of servers that will be available for that form factor and pick the one which is interesting for you from the supplier, which is interesting for you. This opened the door, for example, for people that actually companies that sell servers which are a little bit higher end and they come packaged with a service agreement and a special warranty, etc. These suppliers could not compete in this market before. But today with Open 19, we come to them and say, hey, you can compete over here. Because even if your enterprise or large enterprise customer wants to use those servers, you can still ask for a premium saying, I'm a premium company. I'm giving you special support. I'm giving you special warranty, but it's still Open 19. So if you don't like me at any point, you can move to a different supplier.
You know what I'm thinking? Just the challenges of cabling, that one challenge alone is a huge advantage with something like Open 19. And I'm sure, Ethan, you can relate as to how many data centers we've walked through and the cabling looks like someone vomited spaghetti all over the back of a rack. It blocks airflow. It's impossible to trace. It has actual technical implications. It can actually cause harm to the environment. And just that alone, I'm thinking, oh, that would be so nice not to have to deal with that anymore.
I have pictures of spaghetti, oh buddy, some before and after shots too. Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. Another thing that you've all pointed out to me that I hadn't really considered quite as strongly as the way he made the point is that at scale, efficiency matters. So we were talking about 6 hours or 8 hours to stand up a rack versus an hour and a half using their very modularized system. And small wins equals big benefits. And I started thinking about it, what if I only had to stand up half a dozen racks or a pod or, you know, a couple of rows, not that many. And, you know, you'd allocate a few days or a week to get it done. But man, wouldn't it be nice to just slot things in? Because it's not just the efficiency, it's also the reduction in errors and the simplicity that is brought to getting that rack stood up that makes a system like this valuable. And this is the big deal and I think a strong part of the Open 19 value proposition. Datanauts has great sponsors that make the show possible. One of them is IT Pro TV. I know you've heard from them before, but based on my review of their site, content, and delivery system, I believe it's a solid certification training platform. There's lots of content there, well over 1,000 hours, and you can consume it any way you want to, including devices like Roku and Apple TV. You can even buy via Amazon Video Direct if that appeals to you. The training material offered is likely what you're looking for. Microsoft Server 2016 MCSE. Check. Certified ethical hacker. Check. Cisco, CCNA security. Absolutely. And lots more. And it's not just training, by the way. IT Pro TV also throws in over 100 labs, as well as Transcenter practice exams, so that you have a pretty good sense of when you're really ready to make an official exam attempt. With IT Pro TV, you don't buy a course. You get access to the entire library via a reasonable monthly subscription. Both individual and group pricing options are available. If you change your mind or cash gets tight, you can cancel with no hassle. Check out itpro.tv/datanauts to upgrade your brain with the most popular IT certifications. Premium subscriptions are normally $57 a month or $570 per year, but we have a special offer. Try it free for 7 days when you sign up using our code DATANAUTS30 to check out their courses, live stream, and more. You'll also receive 30% off the lifetime of your account. That's less than $40 per month or $399 for the entire year. Just visit itpro.tv/datanauts, use the code DATANAUTS30, and try it free for 7 days, plus save 30% off the life of your account.
All right, so I've learned quite a bit so far about OPEN19. I had perceptions, and now I'm realizing that they need to pivot a little bit. As an example, I thought that you had to rip out the entire cabinet. I found out that's not true. Let's go deeper into the more practical consideration side of the house. Let's say there is a significant uptake in the OPEN19 project. How is that going to directly impact price for data center infrastructure?
I think that the way we will see that is in data center infrastructure is that you will have an opportunity to build your data center in a way where you can have a cost-effective common technology which is being utilized by multiple operators of the data center, and at the same time be able to leverage cost savings both on the infrastructure of the rack buildup itself, as well as the ability to actually consolidate volume. So when you take the mid-size operators, which are in the tens of thousands of servers, but not in the hundreds of thousands of servers, when we all together come into this, we represent 500,000 to 1 million servers in this environment, and it will create an interest level with all the suppliers to give us a solution, which is the most cost-effective one because it will represent a larger community.
That's kind of like joining together to buy health insurance. You get a whole bunch of small companies together and they pool together and then they represent one entity to a health insurance company. Kind of the same thing. Look, if all these companies have signed on and we're collectively going to buy, as you put it, 500,000 servers, it's very attractive to a manufacturer then to go ahead and manufacture to that spec.
Absolutely. And the beauty of this is that spec is only a spec which is coming on the form factor perspective. So one thing that we did before we started the project, we went and polled the server suppliers. And we asked them, what is the size of your motherboard for a half-wide and a double-wide configuration? And when we defined the form factor for the brick and the double-wide brick, we made sure that none of those suppliers need to go and redesign their motherboard. The only thing they need to do is take the motherboard as is, drop it into the form factor brick or double-wide brick or double-high brick, and create a small adapter that we actually designed for them that will match the backplane connectivity or the blind mode connectivity to the solution that we have with the snap-on cables. Once that is done, that also helps us with the cost because their development is really, really none at this point. It's only a mechanical integration exercise for them, so they can actually spin it very quickly as well as actually leverage any future development that they're doing for their own platforms into this by just putting it back into the same form factor. And that was key for us to be able to leverage the technology which already exists and will that technology will fit into this form factor, get the benefits of the blind-made power and the blind-made data, but not require a new motherboard design, which all of us know it's about an 18 to 24 months development cycle.
Yeah, and that would be a pretty big pushback if you had to refab the kind of the heart of the server. What I'm thinking, though, is this going to be something that's going to impact smaller type footprint infrastructures, you know, more, we'll say, commercial data centers, enterprise data centers, co-location environments where the tenant is selecting this? Because as you talk about doing deployments, I don't think I'm so interested in integration at that point and how fast I can stand up racks. If I'm enterprise scale, they're mostly standing up a rack once in a while. But if you're reducing all those common points of management and things like the cables, the power supplies, all that kind of jazz, that seems like a pretty huge win from a pricing perspective and a complexity perspective, you know, with the nastiness of cabling and whatnot.
Absolutely. And we believe that it will be appealing for enterprises. We already have been contacted by a few large enterprises, especially on the financial side, to get more information about how this can actually fit into their form factor, into their scale. One of the key values that we defined in OPEN19 before we started the project is that solution needs to work to small, medium, and large data centers without any discrimination if you are in any of those sections. And to be honest with you, The smallest configuration that we have at LinkedIn is actually 16 servers. We are building a micro POP that will be distributed across the world for all of our POP solutions in the future. That micro POP is 16 servers. So it's taking one cage of by 8 configuration and using that cage to serve as a micro POP. So that's a really, really small data center, 16 servers, and it can go anywhere. And that's a part of the value for us, because micro POPs appear in a lot of locations which are non-standard, but all of them have one common thing. All of them are 19-inch. All of those locations can't bring in your racks. You get rack space, and that's all you can do. And having this 19-inch solution is on the smallest form factor demonstrates that we can actually do that in a small form factor. When you go to thousands and tens of thousands of units, which is where the enterprise are working, operating their private clouds or operating their personal private data centers, I think this will appeal to them very closely. And we see this already. And that's part of the reason that we also see the interest with what we call the high-end server suppliers, because they're selling a lot into the enterprise. And they feel that they can actually sell this solution into the enterprise and be much more competitive at that point. So I truly believe that the enterprises will be part of this effort and will be part of this solution and will be able to enjoy the volume that we get from the combined solution that we have in the medium size to large size operators of data centers. And just to clarify, the Open19 right now is not only discussed with the medium-sized data center operators. It's being discussed with all the large data center operators in the U.S. as well as in Asia. There are projects which has been defined in India, in China, in the U.S. We are in discussions with all the operators in the U.S. to see if Open19 is a good fit for them. And if it is a good fit for them, what is the model they want to operate under?
Yuval, how does power fit into all this? I mean, reading up on the spec, it's a 12-volt DC spec as opposed to 48-volt DC. And in the context of talking about enterprise, a lot of those folks are not even running DC power supplies. They're still AC. So explain how this power works and why 12-volt DC was chosen.
Absolutely. The feed for the rack itself is AC. It's always AC. And it, even the large data centers, most of them are actually distributed AC. So what we're doing, we're bringing high voltage AC into the rack itself. We're taking into a power shelf. And that power shelf is converting whatever AC input that you have. And we have a variety of options of types of AC location, types of connectors, etc. And converting it into a DC. Then distributing the DC voltage into the servers themselves eliminated the need for the servers to still have power supplies by themselves. They don't need power supplies anymore. So all the servers can eliminate the power supplies. That's part of the cost savings that we have in Open19 and feed the 12 volt from the power shelf. The power shelf can sustain the whole rack. We have two versions of the power shelf. One version is a 9.6 kilowatts, which can contain up to 200 watts per server for 48 servers. The other power shelf is a 19.6 kilowatts. We can actually contain and support 96 servers at 200 watts per server. The server that I'm talking about is a brick. When you go to larger servers, you go double wide, you get double the power and double the data. If you go double high, you get four times the power, four times the data. Now, you're asking why 12 and not 48? There is a hype in the industry right now, oh, we need to distribute 48, especially due to some contribution that happened at OCP recently. 48-volt distribution is obviously more efficient from a current perspective. Then you can actually run lower currents and you have lower loss on the distribution. The problem with that is when we did the polling of all the server guys, the first question we asked them is, what is the voltage that your motherboard takes today? We got 100% answers of 12 volts. None of them said 48 volts. Which means that if we distribute 48 volt in a rack, we need to have in every server another power supply that will translate from 48 volt to 12 volt and then feed the motherboards that are in use right now. Since one of our goals was that we're not asking any of the server suppliers to redesign the motherboards, 12 volt was the most natural thing for us. And we are optimizing extremely well how we actually distribute the 12 volts to make it as low loss as possible. In reality, the efficiency of the power distribution and the power generation for the servers goes up by about 6% by moving to this configuration, which is huge in server configuration because the servers operate on really high efficiency power supplies as is, and at the same time eliminates the power supplies completely from the servers. Only by that you can save hundreds of dollars per server. When you're talking in a very large environment, you're talking about millions of dollars in savings just by eliminating the power supplies.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense when you put it that way, because every board I've worked with is some quantity of 12-volt rails that they're operating. It wouldn't really make a lot of sense to go to 48 and then downstep it somewhere. So that makes a lot of sense, yeah.
So the physical connection to the servers would be what, Yuval? Are we talking about like a power bus, a rail system that would be in the rack when you slide the server in? It hits the rail and gets energized, or something with cables?
It's a little bit more simple on one side and sophisticated on the other side. So it's simple to the fact from a server perspective, the server will slide into the cage, and at the back of the cage, it will have connectors, which are going to be blind mate connectors that will fit into the server. So the server, once it actually plugs into those blind mate connectors, is being energized by the power and actually getting 100 gigabits per second of bandwidth for every one of those bricks. Okay? The distribution in the back of the rack, we were trying to make it as easy to use and as reliable as possible. So what we did from the power shelf, we'll talk about the power first. From the power shelf, we are running cable harnesses, which distribute the power into the different slots and create what we call snap-on cables. So when you install the rack, you install the cage first, then you take that cable harness and snap it into mechanical holes, which are in the back of the cage, and then connect them to the power shelf. Once this is happening, you are doing the distribution in a very, very clean way. We did this for two reasons for the power side. One is to enable us to do a very modular solution that will actually scale for different sizes very easily. Because if you do any bus bar or any other configuration which is rigid, first you have to modify the rack to do that because you start connecting things to the rack and you start creating an environment that the rack is part of the power distribution. We want to eliminate that aspect because we want it going back to any 19-inch rack, not modified. And the second thing, we future-proofed it to the point that if you at every point want to actually develop something else, you want to have higher power servers, you want to have higher power environment, you want to do different types of power distribution, the snap-on function will still stay there and you can actually insert a different connector over there into the same snap-on slot. Just need to build a shell for it that will fit to the snap-on slot. On the data side, what we did, we went and did a blind mate connectivity, again with snap-on cables, which give four channels of 25 gig bidirectional for every one of the bricks. So every half RU in the rack gets up to 100 gig of bandwidth. And then that cable terminates into a switch, which is doing the switching for the rack. With today's switching technology, we can only get 3.2 terabit per second. With 3.2 terabit per second, we can terminate 50 gig for 48 servers. So the initial version of Open 19 will come with 50 gig for every 48 servers. This is what we call a leaf zone. Every 48 servers have a top of rack, and they're defined as a leaf zone for us in our data centers. If you want to do any other configuration, if you want to run lower speed, more connections, or if you want to run a different configuration of the solution, you still have four extremely high-end cables connectivity between every server to the switch. One of the applications that we are looking at right now is utilizing channel number 3 to run out-of-band management. So we're utilizing two channels for 25 gig, 50 gig to the server, and then the third one to utilize for out-of-band. Because the cable is already there, the pins are already there, the 10 gig, 1 gig switch is really, really low cost. So integrating into the switch is really low cost. The one thing that we did on the switch, we eliminated the power supplies from the switch. We compressed the switch to be really, really tight. And by that, we're able to reduce the price of the switch per rack, per leaf zone of 48 by 35%.
That's a good point, and it's something that feeds into something I was reading about the architecture for Open 19, where it was kind of commented that it felt like a rack-sized blade infrastructure, like a blade system that's rack-sized. Is this just kind of a new spin on an old thing, being blades where you slot them in and it has a backplane, and you're talking about that third connection could potentially be the out-of-band management, which every blade kind of needs, or is this something a little more than that?
So this technology is technology that is leveraging a lot of the developments that have been done in the past for developing large chassis. A lot of us that were actually working on this project historically worked on large chassis in CRS1 for Cisco, the T-Series for Juniper. We have a lot of experience with doing that. What we wanted to do over here is we did not want to put a backplane configuration. We wanted to leverage the knowledge and the ability to terminate blind mode connectivity like a blade server or like a switch or router, which is multi-line card. But we want to do it in a generic way, which opens up the door for a lot of innovation and a lot of creativity in the solution that we get. That helps us two things. One, we're leveraging all the technology that has been developed for these high-end systems, like blind mode connectors, 56 gigabit signaling, and all those things. But at the same time, we eliminate completely the lockdown to only deliver it to a specific supplier. Any supplier can fit into this. Because any one of those large systems that have been developed in the industry for the last 20 years, when you buy the system, you can only insert the cards from the supplier that you bought the system. So the system sometimes is not very expensive, but the blades themselves are extremely expensive. Over here, you get the benefit of both. You have common distribution of power, common distribution of data, common form factor, but a variety of suppliers that can fit into this.
Chris, I absolutely loved Yuval's explanation of the 12-volt DC power distribution because I wasn't getting it at first. I'd never really thought about it. I'm so used to the kind of boring and normal AC voltage distribution via PDUs in the back of a rack and then plugging everything into traditional power supplies, off you go. Lots of cables and it's kind of messy, but I'm used to that and that's what I've seen deployed almost everywhere I've been. And then he made the point, power distribution shelves and 12 volt inside means you don't need a power supply inside that server because what are the motherboards run on? 12 volt. Great, so let's give them 12 volt directly. And we'll take care of the power supplies and stepping the voltage from AC to DC and all of that outside of the box. It makes it simpler for server operators, less things to fail, and now modular to plug in. Just slide the thing in, hit a power rail or a clip, etc., and off you go. And I love that.
I agree with you. Once he said the 12-volt thing, and I built a number of white boxes over the years for my desktop at home, thinking, yeah, of course they're all 12-volt. Duh, why didn't I think about that? And also, while hearing about Open19 and exploring further than just kind of what's available out on the web, it just felt like a no-brainer for anyone operating a data center to go towards this. We've all been looking at the advantages of speed and consistency and modularity in code. Why not apply that to infrastructure, especially if you're looking to offer services to tenants and customers and things like that? And it's going to help drive costs down, which is always the principal driver behind anyone operating a data center.
So a few more details as we wrap up this interesting discussion on Open19. Yuval, one thing that pops in my head is the rack is kind of becoming this interesting bit of infrastructure all in its on its own. I mean, because it's kind of becoming more than just a dumb cage to mount stuff in. Are we going to be able to monitor the rack itself at some point?
Yeah, so that goes to some of the concept of disaggregation. The monitoring on the rack level that we wanted to leave is only on the power shelf level. Because the only element in the system, in the rack itself, which is common and not disaggregated, is the power shelf. And that power shelf will have a CPU subsystem with full ability to monitor 100% of what's happening inside. The other element which is common to a portion of the rack, only one of the leaf zones, is the switch. And the switch will look like a server. It will have a BMC, it will have a CPU subsystem, and it will enable us to do 100% monitoring. Beyond that, each and every one of the elements in the rack, each and every one of the server storage solutions are independent. Our expectation and what we are planning to do at LinkedIn is to have an external management system which looks on each and every one of the elements and talks to them in whatever messaging system that we'll pick. I think Kafka right now is one that we are considering. And we'll collect all that statistic information off rack. The one thing that we're trying to avoid very, very cleanly is not to have what some other solutions are offering, like a rack controller. We didn't want to do a rack controller because from our perspective, the rack controller is a single point of failure that gives us the ability to control the rack. But in reality, the rack itself is just four posts of sheet metal, and we don't care really. When you build large data center which are fully disaggregated, each element is independent. So we need to manage each element, and we need to have management on a data center level, much less than on a rack level. But you're still going to have visibility on the rack level from a power management perspective or from a network connectivity perspective.
Oh, that makes a lot of sense, especially if you're holding the state of the information within the same thing that's providing a service. That feels like you said, a single point of failure. And if you have BMCs and IPMIs and other ways to abstract the data and collect it and massage it and do whatever, that should be fine. You're just collecting from a bunch of endpoints. It makes me think about the spec itself, the OPN19 specification. What's the lifespan of the spec, and are you using some kind of versioning system as you ramp up with new designs and things like that?
That's an excellent question. If you go back and say, okay, where are we in this OPN19? So we announced it a few weeks ago. We are in development stage of building the first prototype. The spec itself that we will send out will be a full-blown spec, including mechanical modules, mechanical specifications, data connector specification, power connector specification, and the cage itself and how the cage fits. We believe that with what we defined right now, which is 100 gig to the server and up to 200 to 300 watts per brick, that is going to be an optional if you're going to run a rack-level power management, we will be future-proofed for the next few years, so we won't have to touch it. Our belief that is 100 gig to the server from a data path perspective is going to be probably futuristic for most of even the large data center operators to the 2018-19 timeframe. The specification of the mechanicals are really, really simple and really, really clear. So from your perspective, if you actually fit into this form factor, you design it once. You don't need to touch it. And you don't actually have to design it. We will give you the full design files. You just need to drop your technology inside there. From a perspective of connectors that we picked, etc., connectors that we picked for the servers are all fully 56 gig rated. So we have still another 2x step in there. So if we need to do 200 gig for every brick, which is half wide server, we will still have it on the same connectors, the same technology. You won't have to change anything. And if you need to actually go to a higher level current in the servers themselves for future servers will consume more power, the technology that we pick of connectors, which is RATSEC connectors, have a variety of pin sizes that can actually fit into the same form factor. So if you need to go to a higher form factor in the future, that's completely optional for you. So I think from that perspective, the technology is future-proofing itself for at least one or two steps of upgrades in the process during the next 3 to 4 years. So we believe that from the time that we will release the specs and the modules and the mechanical modules and the electrical modules, we'll be future-proofed for the next 3 to 4 years, so we won't have to touch it. And from that point, it's all innovation around what kind of servers we can get, what kind of storage solution we can get, what kind of switches we can get that will actually support this. One thing just to add to that from a switching perspective, we assumed that the blind mode connectivity for data will not necessarily be very, very highly adoptable day one, because people will be skeptical, say, oh, is this going to work? Is this going to be giving me exactly 100 gig that I'm looking for? What kind of errors I'm going to get? How much it's going to cost? So we defined in the spec that each server is actually also exposing a QSFP connector. In case you do want to give up on the data blind mode connectivity and you want to connect with DAC cables, it's only half utilization of what you get from OPN19, but we still believe that if some people want to do it, they have the option to do that.
Man, there must have been some big voices that wanted that concession, because it really is an addition to things that, yeah, seems unnecessary.
It seems unnecessary, but we want to make sure that we make the technology as adoptable as possible. And if people are a little bit more conservative or concerned, then we give them the option to have a fallback, even if they adopt OPN19 and they don't believe that the blind mode connectivity for data is the right thing for them, they still have an option to use OPN19 and leverage it.
Do you have any commitments from vendors or from end users or customers, if you will, that have said, yep, we want this, we are doing OPN19, we're in?
So we're at the stage that we have not signed any of our legal agreements. We have a legal team right now, which is across service provider, component provider, and operators, which are drafting what is the legal agreement. So until that point is actually signed, I won't be able to share that information. However, the people that did agree to expose their support for this technology, you can see their ticker on the open19.org website. And these are mostly component suppliers and server suppliers at this point. Our peers right now are maintaining their confidentiality because they do not want to churn what they're doing right now with their suppliers. But I'm guaranteed to you that once we make an official announcement of the whole spec and everything, we will do it with some of our peers. We will not do it by ourselves.
Got it. That sounds good. Now, you mentioned open19.org, Yuval. Are there other sites or resources that you might recommend for folks that are interested in this topic?
Yeah, I would recommend to start by signing up to the updates on open19.org. We have a Facebook group and we have a LinkedIn group, which is open19. And discussions will start appearing there in the next few weeks when we start exposing the initial versions of the specs. We also have a Twitter key. Or we're not really using it, but we have one. It's open19in. And we have some blogs which are appearing on the LinkedIn blog, which are actually describing some of the technology that we did, both for the Open19 technology as well as the integration of Open19 into our 100 gig technology in our data center.
Now, Yuval, are you personally social? Do you have a Twitter account? Or I know you've got a LinkedIn account. I mean, how could folks connect with you if they'd like?
I think LinkedIn is probably the best path for me. I do have a Twitter account, but I don't really use it very often.
Of course you don't.
LinkedIn or Facebook is the best way to find me, or email. Email is also old style.
He's too busy changing the world of data centers to bother with Twitter. I get that.
Exactly.
It makes sense. Yeah,
I think the 150 characters limitation is a bit too short for me. Usually I have a lot to say.
And if you're too busy changing the world in your own element, we thank you for taking a break and listening to the DataNauts podcast. And that is it for the show today. You can reach me at EC Banks on Twitter. My blog is ethancbanks.com. And Chris is available at Chris Wall on Twitter and his blog, wallnetwork.com. For more of our DataNauts shows about infrastructure engineering, nosedive down the rabbit hole that is packetpushers.net, you will find the DataNauts talking about containers, conferences, certifications, PowerShell, moving to cloud, full stack engineering, storage architecture, and so much more. And until then, may your server lights blink, your storage spindles spin, and your cables be cleanly managed.
I also like the dog stuff too. That need more folks.
Makes it real.
Yeah, it's golden retriever, so they're basically not really protecting the house. They're trying to play with the people who come next to the house. So, but from outside, it sounds pretty scary.